Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 187, being recorded on the 12th of July, 2017, with special guests Rima Nemi. I'm Sujit, and on Skype with me, I have Kale, Evan, and our special guest, Rima. And before we get to her on a really, really interesting topic today, let's just cover some of the updates in the Azure space. And looks like a fairly full house today.
Is this week Inspire? And
yes.
Next week's Tech Reddit? Yeah, so this is, I mean, lots and lots of stuff going on this week.
Lots of stuff, yeah. So I know both of you guys put a whole bunch of notes in the show notes. Thank you for that. Who wants to pick one of their favorites here?
Kale? Well, there's no blockchain stuff, but I'll try to struggle through this. But
darn it.
Don't worry. I got a backlog coming, so get ready for that. But no, the first one, I think it's probably one of the biggest ones, and everybody can comment on this, is the Azure Stack. Is kind of released, I guess. So at the Inspire event, you mentioned, you know, you can order these integrated systems from our partners at Dell, HP, Lenovo, a bunch listed here in the blog. And, you know, it gives kind of a write-up about, you know, what the kind of promise or what the idea is of Azure Stack and what the unique value is compared to, you know, other on-prem solutions where you might have to do stuff all by hand. Being able to leverage some of the same templates, essentially run a mini Azure in your own data center.
Yeah. And what was really interesting when I read about it, and maybe I missed it in the some of the, you know, the pre-discussions that were going on, you still pay for what you use, right? Although you order this, I don't know, mini data center that gets delivered to your data center, right? And you install it in your environment. But Microsoft still manages it for you remotely, and you still pay for kind of what you use, right? There's probably some, you know, minimum that you have to consume in the month or the year, I guess. But it's still a pay-as-you-go model. It's just running in your data center, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought that was really neat.
Yeah, I think it...
Go ahead, Cal.
Go ahead. Sorry. No, I was going to say maybe we should just mention or walk through it just real high level what components are included. I don't know if you wanted to do that, Evan, or I have it up if you needed.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm still trying to get my head wrapped around everything that's in that space.
Yeah, no, I just... So, you know, when you say, well, it's mini Azure, I mean, obviously Azure has probably hundreds of services now at this point, which is the point of this podcast of kind of walking through some of those. But, you know, it's quite limited to begin with, but it does have a lot of the key features. So obviously storage, is no surprise that, you know, Azure Storage is included, including blobs, tables, and queues, because it's pretty much the foundation for anything running up there. And as well as the kind of virtual machines and the app services, it looks like web apps, mobile apps, API apps, functions, are all included right now. I would assume, and maybe, I don't know if anybody else can comment on this, I don't see it listed here on the page, but I would assume that networking is included, right? The software-based networking?
Yeah, it has to be. I mean, that's kind of a core piece of that.
Yeah.
And it sounds like they've done away with any of the ASM stuff, right? This is all ARM stuff, essentially.
Correct.
That's right.
Yeah. No, that's definitely the big news for this week is Azure Stack, I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll have to do a whole thing on that.
Yeah, we'll have to get Mr. Joy back in here, too.
Yeah, exactly.
He loves to talk about this stuff. All right, so Evan, what do you like in this list here?
I you know, so unlike Kale, one of my two loves is in here. So Network Watcher for Azure Networking has come in. Yeah, this is something we've been working on this for a long time, right? So one of the hardest cases that comes into support is the customer says, hey, you know, I'm having trouble getting from VM1 to VM2. And it can be a lot of different things, NSGs, UDRs, I mean, all kinds of things can do it. We have some tooling internally that helps us figure this out. But it's not easy for a customer to figure this out on their own. There are ways, but it's challenging. So what we're basically doing is the tooling and the abilities we have internally to say, hey, if I send a packet with this destination port from this VM to this other VM, is it going to get there? And if not, what's going to block it? And Network Watcher kind of provides that capability as well. Now, there's all kinds of more stuff coming for that feature as it goes, but that's kind of one of the core ones, is telling you if you can get from A to B. And that's a huge thing for customers to figure out, because it'll tell them what rule's broken, so they can go fix it.
Yep, absolutely. You know, one of the ones that I really liked is this ADEL .NET 3.14.1 release. Obviously, I'm a developer, so I feel close to this. And what's important about this particular one is it adds support for something that's been missing in a while, which is the ability to use client certificates. You know, that's a very common feature in applications, especially if you're writing a daemon or a service style application and you want to authenticate against something. You obviously don't have a username and password in that case, right? Because it's a service, so you can use a client cert. And that was only previously available in the regular .NET, not in .NET Core, and now they've made that available in .NET Core. So I thought that was a good update there. And then I certainly like the way that the Azure Container Service registry service has been updated. We've added go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it looks like we're adding more management capabilities to that.
Yeah, the big one is being able to use Azure Active Directory to authenticate when you have these private repositories. So only your your authenticated folks in your company can get to them. And they've added the delete operation, which was something they've been asked for a while. And finally, they've added the webhook support. This is becoming, I think, common on a number of Azure services, providing webhook support so that whenever an operation is done on some of these objects, you can trigger off this webhook, which can call back to some internal, case management system or maybe a tracking system that you have that's outside of Azure that can record this event, So I think that's some good stuff going on there.
It, also, one thing I did mention that seemed really small there, but if I'm reading this right, they basically have managed SKUs now, right? Almost like managed disk kind of thing, so you don't have to manually create a storage account and all that stuff for the back end of this?
Right. They've used managed disk to store all the images. It's a good point, Kale. I missed that one. And I know, Kale, I think you've brought this up in the past, right? The What's Brewing in Visual Studio Team Services. I think they have this digest, and they've got a new July 2017 digest now of all the updates in VSDS. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, they do a pretty good job of kind of detailing out all the things, as well as like some of the kind of big things about, like, we have one of the world's largest Git repos. And those kind of things in there. So they put these kind of nice attention grabbers there, but they have really good details and even screenshots of like the new features, which is pretty cool.
Yep. And Service Fabric is plugging away. Every time I see the word Service Fabric, I have to see Mark Fussell's name attached to it. It's like it's synonymous with him. And here you go again. He's got this community Q&A that they host regularly, and he's hosting one coming up on July 20th, so we'll put a link to that in the show notes.
The other one that I wanted to mention, this is, if you use Store Simple, you probably run into this, but this is more along the pattern, right, where we moved Store Simple, the 8000 series, from the old portal to the current Azure portal. So, right, we're there's less and less and less in that old portal. It is going away soon.
Yep.
It's very clear. I had to go out there for something the other day, and I was clicking through, and like there was almost nothing that was available that I had access to. So it's getting real close.
Yep. And then all these updates with Azure Backup, right? They've added a whole bunch of. I like the way that they have integrated Power BI with Azure Backup. You'd never think these are two things that don't make sense together, right? Power BI, Azure Backup. What are the two got to do with each other? Well, they figured that people have to do a lot of analysis on the various backups that are being done in their environments. They want to see who's backing up, what the trends are, how much storage they might be using or they would possibly use in the future. And so they've integrated that with these really nice Power BI dashboards so that you can create your own too if there's not one that's available. And makes sense of all that stuff, right? Because backup can be a very tedious thing to analyze. And this is a nice way to make it easier to manage here.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So I think we covered everything, right? All right. Let's get to our special guest, Rima, then. Rima, thank you very much for joining us. And I'd appreciate if we could start by you just introducing yourself and what you're passionate about in the Azure space. And then we'll take it from there.
Sure. It's really great to be here. Thank you for inviting me to this podcast. So, my name is Rima Naimi, and I am currently a GPM on Azure Cosmos DB. Prior to that, I was an architect on Cosmos DB, and prior to that, I worked in a SQL organization. I worked on SQL Data Warehouse. I shipped SQL Server 2016, specifically Polybase in SQL Server 2016. And I've been with Microsoft for about 10 years, and I am passionate about everything that has to do with data. Large, small, any sort of shape or form, anything that has to do with data processing and doing it at scale and optimizing for query processing, query optimization, and extracting insights out of data living internally or externally. That's what I live and breathe. I like it.
Yeah, I'm sure Evan will be very happy
I was
because
going to say, this is the person after my own heart here.
That's there you go.
Yeah. I got into data before it was all hot and popular. So I am a classically trained database person. I have a PhD in computer science with a focus on query processing, query optimization in relational databases. So, sometimes people ask me, people who are not related to technology, they ask me, what do you do? And I usually tell them I'm a plumber. And just the data plumber.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting how I reached out to Rima because there was some other podcast that we had put out on Twitter, and some of our followers said, "Oh, you got to get a hold of Rima and ask her to talk about Cosmos DB." And so here we are. So it's just amazing how that works. Let's just get into Cosmos DB real quick then. Now you said that you've been an architect. You were an architect for Cosmos DB, right? Is that what you said?
So I've been with the team pretty recently, and I started and I joined the team as an architect, and then after the launch of Cosmos DB in May, I literally just switched a couple of weeks ago to take on driving of the business of the Cosmos DB. I have this a little bit of a strange background. I have a business background at the same time, also deep technical background. So sometimes I put on different hats, and I kind of say like you got to be a ninja in order to get it going. So at this point, the job description is really irrelevant
Right.
with respect to, just getting Cosmos DB out there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to think. The name is really great. I got to give hats off to whoever came up with that name. That's a really cool name.
Thank you.
Give us a feel for, how did we come to the conclusion that we needed something like Cosmos DB? We
Sure.
had other things like Document DB and all before. Like, what transpired in all of that to say, okay, we have to come up with something different?
Sure. So it's actually, even though the service seems to be relatively young, we did the launch in May at Build. It's actually a 7-year journey. So the project started as Project Florence in the late 2010, and it was started by Dharma Shukla, who is a distinguished engineer and who is a general manager today running Cosmos DB, also open source software analytics. And the goal behind Project Florence was how do you develop planet scale applications, and how do you design a database backend in order to support planet scale applications? And at the time, internal first-party customers, for instance, Bing, Office 365, Xbox, they were building large internet-scale consumer apps, and they were always looking for the back-end database solution that could scale with their app and be globally distributed, because the users of those applications are everywhere. We are a global company after all. And so nothing was working, you know, not the relational databases, not the open source software solutions. And so Dharma sort of started this mission of how do you create a database backend that will empower people to go and build planet scale applications. And with that comes, you know, how do you write accurate globally distributed apps? How do you deal with managing and versioning of complex schemas? How do you scale both throughput storage based on the global demand, not just localized to one particular region, but doing it overall? How do you balance the needs for strong and eventual consistency? This is your CAP theorem in place. How do you pick the right trade-off, and how do you make it very easy for the developers to reason about it? How do you also develop highly responsive experiences, because latency is very crucial and users are becoming more and more impatient. You know, they want their results, their data right away, very, very quickly. And how do you always ensure that the system is always on? You know, availability is also crucial, because if your data is unavailable even for, you know, for a few seconds, or, you know, let alone minutes, in many cases, it could be a business ending proposition. And so, motivated by all of these challenges, you know, that's how Project Florence was born. And the journey continued on. You know, in 2014, we've taken a subset of the stack and basically shared it with the internal first-party customers who have onboarded and put their apps on top of our stack. In 2015, we released a subset of the stack in the form of the document data model and some of the capabilities in the form of Azure Document DB. And then at the same time, we kept on working on improving, battle testing the software, adding other capabilities. And then finally, in May of 2017, we've launched a full set of capabilities in the form of Azure Cosmos DB.
Wow. That's quite
a journey.
That's amazing.
Yes. So it may appear that it's new, but a lot of work, you know, the way Dharma puts it, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears went into this. So,
yeah.
You know, it's great to see it, you know, that it shaped up the way it has. And seeing how early decisions that in many ways were fundamentally disruptive and very, very different from how the systems were built at the time, how they are paying off right now. You know, that's really the pleasure to see that.
That's just an amazing story. Yeah. Now, but when you had we had Document DB, I know that's been fairly, very, very popular. We've talked about this on the show a lot. And now we're at a position where we're trying to, what takes front and center? Cosmos DB is going to take front and center, and where does Document DB sit as it was? Are we saying we shouldn't be using Document DB and just use Cosmos DB going forward?
So you know, just to clarify, the Document DB is also now a part of the Cosmos DB family.
Okay.
It actually manifests itself in the form of an API on top of Cosmos DB stack, and all of the existing Document DB customers have been seamlessly migrated onto the Cosmos DB stack. So if I were to sort of give you a very high level picture of what is Cosmos DB and how does it fit with both Document DB and how does it actually compare to what Azure has with respect to other data services and the outside world, you know, I would characterize Azure Cosmos DB is a globally distributed, massively scalable, multi-model database service. And so the core of the service is comprised of, you know, five fundamental differentiations. One is global distribution turnkey. And what that means is Cosmos DB is a foundational service, or internally we call it as a ring zero service. That means it's automatically present in all of the Azure regions. And you know, whenever a new region becomes operational, typically we roll out the services based on their categorization. So we will automatically be in every Azure region. And the capability that we add with respect to global distribution is that you can come to a map, literally you can see a world map, and you can see all of the Azure regions there. And you can take your database entity, and by entity I mean it could be a table, or it could be a graph, or it could be a collection of documents, and select the regions where you want your data to be, click save, and then the data gets seamlessly replicated into those regions. And then when the application goes and uses that data, the users get served the local data closest to their geographic location. So if my application is running across US, Europe, Asia, and let's say Australia, the users from Australia, when they're interacting with my application that is built against Cosmos DB, they will get served the closest to them data. And at any point in time, you can add or remove any number of regions. So today we are already running across 34 plus regions inside Azure. And it will be basically exactly the same scale as Azure Cloud itself. So this is one capability. The second fundamental capability is that Cosmos DB is elastically scalable database that gives you elastic scale out of both storage and throughput. And you can basically go from, you know, a few gigabytes to terabytes to petabytes of data very, very seamlessly, and the database will scale with it as you need to. And with respect to throughput, you could basically specify the provision, the throughput that you need to support your specific workload. And you can dynamically adjust it at any point in time. And you can adjust it based on the geographic location, time of the day. For instance, you know, when it's a daytime in, in Asia, it's a nighttime in North America, you can dynamically adjust the throughput based on the volume, based on the activity that your application anticipates at that time. The third part is the service gives you guaranteed low latency at the 99th percentile. And this is, remember when I mentioned what are some of the challenges and design goals that we had, we wanted to provide near real-time response. And so the engine is designed to be, first of all, to be completely schema agnostic, and it automatically indexes all of the data on the ingest into Cosmos DB. And this is very different, for instance, from relational databases where you have to specify schema, then you have to load your data into that schema, and then you have to specify a set of indices in order to make your queries run fast. In Cosmos DB, it's sort of the reverse, a reverse model where your data gets automatically indexed and you have to opt out of indexing. And so your queries get served very, very quickly.
Wow.
And then the other difference is Cosmos DB is also the only service today that gives you 5 well-defined consistency models. And the concept of consistency is actually a very fascinating subject in distributed systems and distributed databases. And if you look at most of the operational databases today, typically they give you a very binary choice. Do you want strong consistency at the price of higher latency and lower availability? And this is what typically relational databases give you. Or do you want eventual consistency, which basically will make your data available very, very fast? You will get very low latency, but at the price of some of the stale data being served to your users, your customers. And so most of the systems today sort of give you this very extreme binary choice. In Cosmos DB, what we've done is we've actually looked at the research and we've distilled a set of intermediate consistencies that are in between these two extremes that are easy to understand, very intuitive, and they're actually also very practical. And so we've, in addition to the two extreme choices, we also added these 3 intermediate consistency models, bounded staleness, session consistency model, and consistent prefix. And so developers can go and pick this trade-off between performance, between consistency that makes the most choice for their application. Mm. And the interesting thing is, actually, majority of our users, based on the telemetry, choose those intermediate levels. And this is something that there is no other operational database today on the market that gives you this capability, which is pretty amazing. And the last one is the comprehensive SLAs. And again, this is something unique, you know, to Cosmos DB, where in addition to high availability, this is the service that gives you also SLAs on low latency, high throughput, and consistency at the 99th percentile. And the idea here is, again, because it's a managed service, we wanted to take a lot of that burden and a lot, and give the peace of mind to developers, to customers, not to worry about performance, throughput, consistency. And so the stack has been benchmarked pretty solidly in order to be able to provide such guarantees and also make them financially backed. So this is kind of like the core. And then what we've done on top of this core is basically made two fundamental choices. Number one is, we said it's going to be a multi-model service because no data is born relational, and typically, you know, the data could be shaped in the form of either key value store, could be also stored as documents. In some ways, the most native format would be a graph. And so instead of picking one data model, we said, how can we build a service that could actually enable all of these data models, so that if you are building an application and you need all these capabilities, you don't need to go and provision n number of services, each one unique to that particular data model. And the second decision that we made was make it a multi-API service, so that developers coming from different worlds, if they have different preferences for a different language or a different API, they could actually get onboarded and use Cosmos DB almost seamlessly. So for instance, if you like to use SQL, we provide the SQL API. If you're building a mobile or a web application, we provide JavaScript API. If you're coming from Mongo world, we've just GA'd MongoDB API a few months ago. And then at Build, we've also announced the public preview for table APIs and Gremlin API for graph. And so the beautiful part there is that you can come through any one of those APIs, use the data model of your choice, and then take advantage of, you know, global distribution, low latency, consistency model of your choice, get the scale out that you need for throughput, for storage, and then get also the SLAs. So it gives you the peace of mind that, you know, your performance will be fine, your availability will be fine, and you can actually focus more on the, you know, on your application rather than the backend database.
This almost, I mean, when you describe this, it almost sounds like, you know, one database to rule them all. But, you know, one, in essence, saying that for you ultimately have one service, or Cosmos DB is one service under the covers. You know, you guys only have to think about one aspect, but somebody that's out there developing an app can either take kind of their existing code and ingest their data and then just theoretically not change their code very much, or if I'm starting an application from scratch, I should just go to Cosmos DB. Right? Yes. I should just start there rather than starting on something else and then sometime later trying to figure out how to move or migrate to Cosmos DB.
Yeah, that would be my recommendation. For any net new application, you should consider starting with Cosmos DB, because chances are, if you're building an app today, whether it's mobile, web, IoT, or AI app, your requirements for the data that you will be processing typically will fall into the category of dealing with very, very rich data, you know, that could be coming from either an IoT device, or it could be coming from social channels in the format of JSON. And you need to process that data very, very fast, because the signals sort of come and go. And if you don't process it very quickly, you might miss out on the opportunity. And the sheer volume and variety of that data just sort of, makes it almost impossible to put it into something like a relational database, you know, and, you know, structure it, create a perfect physical design so that your queries run very, very quickly. by the time you get to that, chances are you might miss out on the signal. And then the volume of the data, you know, sometimes people talk about digital exhaust, or, you know, this almost like, you know, massive amounts of data. Somewhere the other day I saw a statistic that in the last 2 years alone, a couple of years alone, there was more data generated than ever before.
Yeah, I've heard that as well.
Yeah, so the speed of data being generated, because we all have mobile devices, everything becomes connected, and everybody wants to try to process that data and distill some nuggets out of it. And so from that point of view, also, you know, because users are present everywhere, you know, in many cases you might build an app today and then tomorrow it becomes viral and you might be located in a small town in, you know, for instance, somewhere close to Seattle, but most of your users could be in Asia. And so how do you actually serve that client base, that user base, very, very effectively? So in this case, something like Cosmos DB will enable you to first, you know, co-locate your data close to where your users are, you know, wherever they are in the world, and then, you know, process the data in whatever shape or format that it is in, and do so very, very quickly.
Go ahead, Sajid.
No, after you, Evan.
I was just going to say, I mean, so is this even true? I mean, you know, you can sometimes hear about these apps you're talking about, like the IoT scenarios where you've got lots of data. But there's also, you know, somebody that's just starting out with a little bit of data, right? It sounds like they should be here as well, just in case
yes.
at some point they do need the larger data set.
Correct. So you
right? There's no downside to starting here.
No, absolutely. That's a very valid point. If you're starting out very small, you start out small and you can either, you know, start out in one region with just your small database and get exactly the same benefits that you would if you're running at a very large scale. In fact, actually, if you want to try it without even going into the cloud, it was one of the most frequent asks from developers and from people who are looking into Cosmos DB. Having a local version of something like Cosmos DB just to try it out, you know, and become familiar. And so we actually have a local version of Cosmos DB, which is a high fidelity emulator that you can go and install on your machine, on the bare metal, and build an app as if you're building against Cosmos DB locally on your machine, completely free, and, you know, try it out without, you know, incurring any costs or charges on Azure. And then when you feel ready, you can take your app and just seamlessly migrate it onto Azure as well. And we have this emulator both, like I said, as an installable version, and also you can get it as a Docker image. So it's very, very easy to try out and see if it makes sense for your application.
Oh, that's nice. Nice to have. I mean, I think that's the piece that really resonates with me, is because you're always sitting around wondering, should I do X or Y, right? Should I go use a relational today or use Mongo? This kind of takes that choice away and just says, just go use Cosmos if I'm starting from scratch and just be done. Don't ever have to worry about it.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, Rima, I was just thinking about something. You've heard of Splunk, right?
Yes.
So just suddenly a thought occurred to me. It's like, so Splunk is a system also, right? Similar, where you can just throw any document at it. It indexes everything, right? And you can query on anything, right? That's essentially what Splunk does. It sounds like Cosmos DB does the same thing though, right?
But Cosmos DB was designed to really take advantage of the cloud from the ground up and
right.
sort of take away all of the burden with respect to, you know, global distribution, scaling out, worrying about the performance to sort of yet another level. So in many fundamental ways, you know, because it's a managed service, because it was also natively built for the cloud and it was born in the cloud, there are some subtle differences in the way the stack was designed, was to really, you know, for instance, take into account global distribution from the ground up. And, you know, again, because cloud is everywhere across the globe, we can enable that. Then also take, design for fine-grained multi-tenancy from the ground up. And the idea there was, how can we put, for instance, hundreds of customers on a single machine, or maybe thousands of them across the cluster, but yet provide end-to-end resource governance across the entire stack so that we can use the machine and the cluster resources in the most optimal manner that you possibly could. Sort of take, again, that burden away from the users doing it themselves and requiring the expertise that is very, very limited. Mm-hmm. And as the net result is you fundamentally exploit the cloud core properties and the economies of scale at the level that was unprecedented before. And the net result is that the cost of that solution for sort of the value that you're getting out of it is pretty amazing. In fact, I would say IaaS hosted managed offerings would have a very, very hard time trying to make something like that. And again, because it was sort of, again, the cloud, the cloud database that was born in the cloud and trying to exploit all of the core properties from the ground up. And then on top of that, as I mentioned, you know, adding the capabilities to store the various types of big data, you know, in the form of various models, and then opening up various APIs makes it kind of like yet another order of differentiation.
Sure.
Yeah,
I can see that. I mean, this is just, it's amazing. It's like you can have your cake and eat it too, you know, kind of scenario.
Yeah.
It's really the best of all worlds. I can't, it's like there's nothing wrong with Cosmos DB.
But it requires a little bit of a different mindset when you approach building your applications against something like Cosmos DB. You know, for instance, I mentioned about resource governance and provisioning throughput. So we have this concept of resource units, RUs. What they are, basically, they're logical currency of the resources that are reserved by the customer to support their throughput needs. And in some sense, you have to reason about your requirements, your application requirements, in a slightly different way that is decoupled from sort of physical hardware, the way you would typically approach that problem. You know, for instance, if you're creating your own scale-out solution, or you put your database on premises and you spin up three nodes, you have a cluster composed of three nodes, you have to deal with physical machines, you have to know about how many cores, how much memory do you have there, and take advantage of all of that. We sort of abstracted all of that complexity away in this concept of RUs. And, you know, one way to think of it, you know, sometimes I give the analogy, it's like Bitcoin for Cosmos DB world.
Oh, here's Kale's favorite. you just brought Kale's favorite technology just left
blockchain.
My hand. Blockchain is a conversation.
Yes. So it requires a little bit of different mindset and different maybe thought process when you are, you know, developing against a system like Cosmos DB. But it, in some sense, it actually makes things very easy. But sometimes, because people are coming, if they're coming from the sort of older world of relational databases, and they used to think about, you know, how many nodes, how many cores, how much RAM do I have? The paradigm sort of shifted here with respect to this logical currency. And so we provide, you know, the tools for developers to go and estimate their needs. For instance, if they have a particular, collection of documents, if they know a little bit about their workload, we have this calculator, RU calculator, that can look at your subset of your, basically a subset of your workload and can give you some ideas for how much provision throughput do you need. But one of the things I'm observing is that many customers, actually, believe it or not, it's not as easy as you think to change from the old world to the new world, how you reason about it.
Right. And so you mentioned about the SQL. Is there a way to use SQL-like syntax?
Yes. So
how does that work?
Yeah, as a part of, even in as a part of DocumentDB, when we released the document data model, as a part of DocumentDB API, we provide support for SQL language. So it's a sort of SQL flavor, declarative query language that allows you to query your containers of data. And by containers, I mean collection of documents that is stored in the JSON format. And it supports the same basic predicates, you know, select from. We also just added support a few months ago for aggregates. So you can do, the aggregates in addition to selection projections and do the self-document joins as well. So it gives you all the same basic predicates that you would use for instance, if you're using SQL Server or any, open source relational database. The type format, the type system that we use, the actual type system is actually called ARS, which stands for Atoms, Records, and Sequences. And this is a concept from computer science that allows you to take basic types. For instance, the atoms in this case would be, for instance, integer, float, or string. And out of those atoms, you can create records, which you could go create more sophisticated structures. And then out of the records, you can create nested structures. And so the way it manifests in the actual physical representation inside Cosmos DB is something like a human readable JSON representation with JSON as a type and the JavaScript being the first class citizen. We can basically take that JSON representation and then use SQL, our flavor of SQL, to be able to go and query it as a, as this nested data structure. So again, in many cases, it's really it's pretty straightforward, and for people who come from relational background, it's really really easy to pick it up.
That's great. This is really awesome, Rima. Thank you. Thank you so much for, you broke it down for us so nicely. I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
I'm sure our listeners are really chomping at the bit now to get to that. And we'll get some links from you, and we'll put them in the show notes, right, so that our listeners know where to get started on all this stuff. Any more questions for Rima, guys?
No, this is great. I've already made up my mind. The next time I sit down and write a new app, I'm not going to bother. As an ex-SQL person, I always spin up SQL. I'm not going to bother spinning up SQL. I'm going to try and do it on Cosmos.
Excellent. Thank you.
Right. Well, thank you very much, Rima.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle, @AzurePodcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.